Either way, someone says, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm listening to Alan breathe heavily. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the Irenicast. We are a weekly podcast dedicated to the exploration of faith and culture. We are your hosts. I'm Jeff.
Hey, I'm Mona.
And I'm Alan.
Thank you once again for joining us. This week, our conversation is going to be on gender roles, which is a broad topic we know, but that's kind of our MO at this point, is introduce a broad topic and let everyone discuss or complain or rant or argue or whatever. But this one in particular, I think, is going to bring about some interesting conversations.
You know, it is interesting that we're talking about gender, because just the other day, I was having a conversation with one of Mona's family members. And she told me that back in the day, she had like lost her shoes at the lake when they were visiting our house or whatever. And we gave her a pair of Batman shoes for my little brother to wear. And she thought it was like the weirdest thing because she's wearing these Batman shoes. And then I told her about a memory I had of going to Mona's house. And sad to say, the only bike, we were all riding bikes, and the only bike that was left for me was a purple bike. And I remember I was in elementary school. I was super self-conscious about riding a purple bike. And I talked to Mona's mom and I was like, you know what? I don't know. I'm not going to do it. And she told me, if you get made fun of, I will give you a quarter. And I was like, okay, I guess that sounds like a good idea. And so I rode the bike, and no joke, within 10 seconds, like, I got made fun of by the neighborhood boys. Oh, hey, you're riding a purple bike. So anyway, that's my like little own personal scarred past with gender and that kind of thing.
But did you get the quarter?
Comes to mind. I did get the quarter.
Awesome. Did you use it on one of the machines at the grocery store?
No, but you know, even as a little kid, I felt bad taking it. I was like, you know, I may be in third grade, but I realized this is stupid and I shouldn't be taking this quarter. It was pretty bad.
But you took it anyway.
That's reminded me of them. It's reminding me of a story. One of my friends told me recently. She's like on Tinder, right? And the rule now with Tinder and amongst my friend group is either has to be someone you're very excited about going out with, or it has to create a very good story about how bad it was. But you can't do anything in the middle. So this was the latter. This is a good story guy. Like, this guy was just so out to lunch and like played her videos of him lifting weights in the gym to like try to impress her. Like, oh, silly. Nice.
That's
silly.
Amazing.
And kept referring to him beating the record, like the record. And she's like, wait, do you mean your personal record? He's like, yeah, but I beat the record. So anyway, you know, where I live in the winter,
the regional manager.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's all semantics anyway. So anyway, there's this one particular part of the conversation where after this guy proceeds to order her drink for her, does not ask her what she wants. He was asking her about riding bikes because, you know, riding bikes in a snowy climate can be incredibly dangerous, right? The roads are slick and there's salt and everything. And he proceeded to tell her that she was cute, that riding her bike in the winter was cute. And he asked her if the bike had tassels on the handlebars.
What?
Wow.
And she's like an amazing athlete. She's an amazing athlete. And this jackweed was like telling her she was cute for like risking her life and, you know, and her hobby. And so, yeah, like sexism is incredible, isn't it? Sometimes I'm just like, what are people thinking? But it made a good story. So she fit the criteria.
Yeah, as long as it's a good story. And that's true in life, right? If something bad's going to happen, at least it better make a good story so that you can...
At least. Yeah. I hope she doesn't mind I told that story. I didn't divulge any identities, but...
we'll put like, all the names and profiles on the show notes.
Yeah,
and
we're going to create a segment. We're going to create a segment because I believe, you know, it would be beneficial for everyone to hear about your own Tinder story. So we'll have like Mona's Tinder moment, right?
Oh my God, this can start, but I need to get, you know, no dating for me for a while, guys. This is so over it, but that could happen maybe.
Can I just say, and I hope this doesn't offend any of you single listeners, but I'm so glad that I was done with all that before internet dating became the thing.
Internet dating is fun. Like, it's so entertaining.
I'm sure it is, but then I'm sure there's a stressful aspect to it.
So different.
Yeah.
And
I mean, if you're desperate to find somebody, that's different. But if you're literally just doing it because you're bored, it is so fun.
To each their own. Have at it, y'all. And
well, you know what we do at my house? We have a projector, and we actually, all the housemates put their Tinder profile on the projector. Nice. And then vote by committee on who they should go out with. Very cool. It's really fun. Good.
That's a
group exercise.
Good community exercise.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Freaking Tinder. I don't know.
All right. Well, I'm sure that we will explore many more of these issues and all that kind of stuff as we get to the other side of the music. So again, we're talking about gender roles, and we know that's a weighted issue, but that has not stopped us before. So join us on the other side of the music, and we will start the conversation. All right. Like we said at the top of the show, today we're going to be talking about gender roles, which is a pretty big issue depending upon the circle that you come from. And I know for me, this particular issue was impacted because all growing up in church, I remember one book specifically that came out that everyone said I needed to read, and it was called Wild at Heart. And it was
I read it too. Freshman year of college for me.
I remember feeling when I got to the end of that book, like, oh my goodness, I am not a real man, because I hate to fish and I hate to hunt and I hate the outdoors. And I think all throughout my adolescence, I struggled with not feeling like I was a real man. And part of that was family dynamics, not having a dad around or anything like that. But it was never helped when I went to church. It was always something that created more stress. And I can't imagine the issue of gender roles and what I'm supposed to be as a man. You know, I can't imagine how that would affect a female. Mona, I mean, I'm sure you have some interesting stories to tell or experiences that you faced as a result of what your community said a woman was supposed to be.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I don't know where to start. I mean, it's... My experience is a little different that I think than the normal evangelical, in that our denomination actually ordained women to preach and minister and things like that. So that there was, but there was still a pretty implicit sense that there was a clear hierarchy, that men were still the leaders, like, you know, and, but I mean, that's very different than a lot of churches that where women like literally don't speak, or let alone hold leadership
roles. The church that I came from is like that. I remember, like, sorry to cut in, but I have a vivid memory of a woman being baptized at our church, and one of the pastors, women were not allowed to be pastors or elders in the church that I came from. So a pastor stood up and read her testimony and literally said before he started, she's really happy to be baptized. She's very excited, you know, to proclaim her faith as a Christian. But she wants to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, women shouldn't necessarily speak or whatever. So she's going to have a man read her testimony. And like that for me was a picture of like how women were supposed to function in the church setting that I came from. So
that's amazing. And so I didn't see that. Like, I saw women preaching from time to time. I mean, usually the women like did the children's ministry and the music ministry. Mm-hmm. And actually a friend of mine started like the ordination process in her denomination, who's a woman. And she was told that she was too educated, and the fact that she'd worked for a mainline church would both work against her in that ordination process. Wow. So I think there really is a clear undercurrent of like, mm-hmm. Women can't, especially like if you're going to be a vocal woman, you better like really kind of go with the flow. And if you're too rabble rousing, then you're going to get some blowback, you know? So I never fit any of that. I mean, no, that's not true. I did like preaching and stuff in high school in my youth group and kind of had some leadership roles, but I'm remembering two distinct things that happened that really jarred me. Encountering what you were talking about, Alan, of that, like this concept of like women being silent. Because I was raised like being told, hey, you know, you're a leader by my parents and stuff. Like I was recognized for having like it was always seen as like more of a stronger personality. And I was told by a lot of people, hey, you know, you need to be assertive rather than aggressive, because like women who lead by example are more like softer speech, like get more done, they win more friends, things like this. So I think it was kind of beat out of me from an early age that, like, if you are bossy, game over. You cannot be come on too strong. So you have to temper yourself, you know, you have to temper yourself, and you have to, like, kind of have this veneer of submission a little bit. So two things happened. So I was the president of my campus.
Mona, just to interrupt real quick. You said bossy. And I just, that word, bossy. Having daughters fairly recently, and that idea of, I have never heard that term used towards a guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's always a leader, or they're, you know, they're going to lead all that. And then it's always, I'm sorry. It just caught me as, like, one of those personal, like, oh, I can't imagine, like, how much I feel when you say that word bossy being told to you, and how much, like, hurt I feel because of that, and how much more it must be from a woman's perspective. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That means a lot to hear you say that. It's actually really healing, because I've heard so much opposite from the other side, you know?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Us men are just going to keep interrupting.
No, I was just going to say, Jeff recently listened to Bossy Pants, right, by Tina Fey, and then recommended it to me, and I listened to it too. And, like, I had the same experience that he did. Like, that's kind of outside. I kind of didn't realize women struggled with certain things like that. So to hear, like, a woman talk about her experience and how, like, being, you know, told that you're bossy or whatever doesn't get you as far is totally foreign to my experience, even though, like, probably half of the people from my background dealt with it too. So I just thought that was pretty interesting.
It goes along with this sense of womanhood that where your entire demeaning ought to be pleasing, mostly to the male eye. Like, think about how many times I've been walking down the street and, like, perfect strangers have told me to smile because my face was not happy enough for them. No, seriously, or like,
oh my goodness,
if women have a furrowed brow, right? Like, okay, so if you think of the word the furrowed brow and the word pondering, what do you think of? Usually images of, like, the thinker, like that statue of the guy who's, like, a philosopher and he's thinking. But if women have a furrowed brow, we get told, hey, why are you worried? Why are you anxious? What's wrong? You know, like, it's a problem for women not to have a pleasant demeanor. It's not a norm. Like, we are automatically supposed to placate and people please. And so I think that socializes women to be incredibly paranoid about what people think of them. Like, really, you know. So anyway, I had two encounters that sort of, I don't want to take up all the time, like, talking about this, but it's interesting how all of these things interconnect and what historical legacy there is. But I had two experiences. So one was when I was the president of the Campus Christian Club my senior year in high school. There was a group of students who attended a church in my club who their pastor, having never met me, told the kids that I was a woman, therefore unfit to lead this group of fellow students. And so they came to me quoting the Bible, and it caused a huge stir. And the group, like, there was other issues too. And I didn't do everything perfectly, but the group went from, like, 100 something members to, like, 20 members over the course of my, even though the prior president had been a woman as well. It was just a strange confluence of events. So that was the first thing that stands out to me as being so hurtful. Like, this pastor didn't take a lick of time to get to know me, but just decided, you know, that this was right and this is not biblical. And then another thing was a fellow student in college, like, he and I got in this big discussion about that, what Christians call the complementarian versus the egalitarian debate, right? Complementarian meaning, like, men and women have different roles in the church that complement each other. Egalitarian meaning, it doesn't matter. Men and women can have the same roles, like, just go with whoever's good at what or whatever. So we get in this huge debate, and then I kind of told him, hey, you know, well, what if I want to go to seminary someday? You know, professors have told me I'm good at this, like, maybe I should. And this guy, this fellow student, said, you know, it would be a waste for you to go to seminary because you'd only be able to teach women and children, and it would be a waste of money and time. So you should, you know, just try to find a pastor to marry. And I was, like, so hurt by this. You know, it was like, it doesn't matter what happens in my mind, but I don't fit the mold, so therefore I'm not fit, you know. So it's kind of a wild thing to confront that. So even though, like, these fellow students were all, like, not even that close to me, like, third party, like, way removed from my inner circles of people who were encouraging me, it still left such a mark that I ended up putting seminary off for several years because I was so discouraged by that kind of attention, you know?
Wow. What's interesting when you talk about that, how you have these instances that are very external. It's someone coming to you and saying these things about you based on your outward presentation. But my struggle with, like, masculinity and stuff, it was always internal because no one ever came to me, you know? It was because I wasn't, outwardly flamboyant, which I have talked to friends of mine who were, and they did get talked to. But it's interesting how whether you're a male or female really dictates how those circumstances are going to shape what people say and whether they feel they have the right to say it to you. It's really interesting to me.
You know, for me, the only time I was ever talked to was literally as a second grader. I think I dressed up as my grandma for Halloween, and my pastor actually like confronted my mom and said like that's not appropriate having him cross dress or like wear you know things that are not appropriate or something. But like I played football and stuff, so nobody ever like had a problem with me in the way I expressed my gender. From my perspective, though, the way that it impacted me was I had some friends, and not to speak for other women's experiences, but one of my really good friends, one of my best friends in high school, she was one of the two people in our like high school class that got perfect scores on the SAT, like one of the smartest people that I know. Yeah. And she was a part of our youth group. And I remember there was a youth group where we talked about gender roles, where we talked about how women shouldn't be in certain leadership positions. And she talked to me afterward and she was just like, Alan, I'm really struggling with this. Like, I seriously don't see how this fits. And like, I was taught as a man, the way you relate to even women around, like just the women around you, is you infantilize them. Like you treat them as if you were going to be this person that's helping them along. You have to be really understanding, like you have to wear the kid gloves when you talk to them. And so like that almost prevented me from being able to really experience like life through other people's eyes, through like women's perspectives or like even like listen, because I was supposed to be this person who was like sacrificial, long suffering, you know, like that's what we define manhood as, and like really helping this like weaker sex along or whatever. I think the conversation ended up well. I was just like, that sucks. Like I didn't have much to say, thank God. But like that, I felt this pressure to like help, you know, women in general, like, you know, accept their lot in life. And as a man, that carried over into my sense of manhood, as manhood is all about being sacrificial. And so you take on these huge burdens, like even in my marriage, taking on these huge burdens, you know, it falls to the man or whatever, that are totally unhealthy. And it's very like being selfless and sharing yourself with someone is very good. And I think that's healthy. But what I'm talking about is going further than that and like mandating that people, the way you even think about yourself as a human being, you are someone who is supposed to take on other people's problems, and like you are supposed to fix all the problems in the relationship. If you were just perfect, man, you know, your wife would fall in line. I don't know. That's kind of like what
I think it's important to note that idea, I guess we could call it chivalry or whatever, is not just a church evangelical conservative thing. It is, I think it's pretty prevalent as far as how the sexes are supposed to interact. I mean, look at every romantic comedy. I can't even name one that doesn't have that base of the guy is supposed to do this, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, I want to play a little game, and I want you to – I'm going to say a word, and I want you guys to tell me male or female. What do you associate this more with? Okay?
Yay.
All right? Are you ready? Binary.
I'm just letting you know right now I'm going to lie because I want everyone to think who's listening to this that I'm perfect. No, I'm just joking.
No, that's be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. When I say the word strong, male or female?
Obviously male, right?
No,
that's the first thing you think of? No comment? No,
like what did I used to think of, or like what I think of now?
Honestly,
like,
I still think male. I'll just be honest. That I, when you said strong, I thought of a male.
You know what's really interesting?
Although
I would always say male before, but no joke, in the past 5 years in my relationship with your sister, Jeff, she is such a strong personality and like such an awesome leader that I've like my whole reality in the respect to gender and stuff like that has been very reshaped, and I'm different than I used to be. I definitely would have said man before, right? Because women are supposed to be weak or whatever. But it's hard to play this game now because honestly, like I think of.
Well, just to be fair, I didn't want to say male, but that was the first thing that came up. But then like a quick little almost overlapping that initial thought was that picture of the, you know, the 50s lady with like the holding.
Oh, Rosie
her.
The Riveter.
Yeah, that was the second thing that came into my mind right away. But honestly, the first thing I thought was
male. Okay, yeah. So I'll tell you why I'm doing this in a minute. But yeah, you guys raised some really good points. Okay, when I say the word nurturing, do you think of male or female?
Female.
Okay.
Female.
How about sensitive?
Female.
Male.
Really?
Yes, but in a negative connotation.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that person's sensitive.
Yeah, he exactly.
Be sensitive. He should be. Interesting.
Interesting. Okay, how about the word bold?
Male.
Female.
Winston Churchill.
Jeff, when you say female, do you think of Bold in a negative light or a positive light?
No, actually a positive light. And okay. It's funny, but thinking I like three women pop into my head, my wife, my sister, and my grandmother, like those are, I didn't just think of those three. Like those are the first three things I thought of when you said bold.
Nice. Nice. Okay. How about the word war?
Male.
Male.
How about peace?
Male.
Really?
Yeah. I thought Martin Luther King. So just male. Okay.
Yeah, because men are the peacemakers and keepers.
Yeah, so it's still male. Still misogynistic either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about the word honor?
Male.
Male.
Yeah. How about the word shame?
Male.
I don't know. Probably female.
So this comes out of Greek philosophy. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that's why it's interesting that even in like what you could say arguably is a post-religious culture, we still have this latent association with what traits are male and what traits are female.
Yeah.
Because of freaking Plato. freaking Plato.
Because of biology. Biology gave it rise before Plato came in, I think.
Actually, that's I read something interesting, and I don't know if either of you have come across this, but that the idea of gender roles is a result of technology. Where if it made the argument that if in the beginning of society when you had hunting and gathering, like they just went and did what they needed to do. And then once the gathering part incorporated like using a plow and using heavy equipment, which would lead to, because obviously the point of earlier civilizations was to procreate and create families, it would lead to the women having a higher instance of miscarriage. So it was a practical thing, like because this is the way society is. And then obviously over time it evolved to, oh, well, the power structure changed because people got used to it. But that part of the reason why we're having this big shift now is because of technology, because all those things that required strength and certain things physically have shifted. And those things are kind of being done away with to run a society and keep people alive. And that's why we're kind of in this shift. It was an interesting thought. I don't know what you two think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So this is my first thought is that, so we can all think of women who are incredibly physically strong and we can all think of men who are incredibly physically weak comparatively, yes. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know women who can just kick any dude's ass, right? So there's a spectrum of physicality,
yes,
that goes from one side to the other. And those for men and women and many other genders, like there's a lot of overlap, right? So to me, that theory falls apart, especially when it comes to when there is a hierarchy, not just differentiation, but when there's a hierarchy.
So
men being physically strong translates to men having more of a voice.
Oh, well, let me correct that. It wasn't necessarily like, and I probably verbalized it wrong, but it wasn't making the argument that it was a physical strength thing, but that it was a practicality thing, is that biologically the women had to give birth, and because that was being hindered by the work itself, by the strain of the work, not that they weren't capable of doing it,
but
it was affecting the procreation. And then I think that this the role turned into a hierarchy, but I think that they're not exclusive of one another, that one leads into the other if it's there long enough. Does that make sense? No.
I think so. I'm not quite following.
If there's a role that comes out of practicality, like you need to do this and I need to do this because this is just the most efficient way for us to do it. Over time, you forget why you did that in the first place and it becomes hierarchy. Does that make sense?
Okay. Like emergence. Go ahead, Alan.
Sort of, yeah.
I think there needs to be said at least earlier on in this conversation. It's not super early, but like, not to spoil alert anybody or whatever, but when we're talking about gender personally, all three of us, we're very sensitive to the idea that gender is, there are many different types of gender. It's not fluid. Just male and female. Yeah, it's more fluid. Maybe we should even just talk about that right now, right? So traditionally, gender is, there is male and there is female, and they're totally binary. There's one and there's another. And like Mona was just saying, one is strong and honor bound and like, you know, bold and all that. And then the other is like submissive and nice and pretty or whatever and domestic and nurturing. And so like there's this, that's how you construe typical maleness and typical femaleness. And did you say it goes back to Plato? Did you say
that? I brought up the Greeks because in Greek society, gender was as much your class,
mm-hmm,
and maybe more than your biology and your parts.
So
meaning that male slaves in Greek society were not considered actually men. They didn't have rule over their bodies sexually. They couldn't produce an heir because of forms of inheritance. So I think it's interesting to go back to Greece because Plato and a lot of these Greek philosophers actually wrote that women were deformed men because we were born without.
That's actually Aristotle, and he wrote that there would be like a something that affects. Not to get too like graphic description, but the sperm or whatever. Like if a wind is blowing while that happens, there's like this deformed process and you get a woman. There's like the archetype of a chair, right? There's an idea of a chair out there that exists there somewhere. And we like when we create a chair, it's a shadow, like a form of that. And so like when you think of like the perfect humanhood, you think of a man, you think of a male, like that is what the perfect human being is. And then women are these deformed, misshapen males, whatever, that's Aristotle. But we've taken that and we've held on to the archetype idea. We may have become more equality based, right? Like Christians wouldn't say, you know, most Christians in America wouldn't say men are more important than women. Complementarianism is the idea that men and women are equal, but they just have different functions. And it's like, but you're still subscribing to the idea of the archetype. You're saying the perfect male looks like this and the perfect female looks like this. And they're things that we have to strive after. Do you get what I'm saying? Like those prescriptions are still there.
I mean, so maleness is normative and femaleness, woe man, means not male, right? Mm-hmm. So femaleness is inherently othered in classic thought and into today. So when I'm talking about Plato and Aristotle, yes, I'm talking about, you're right, that's Aristotle. But I'm also thinking about this idea that women are of the earth and were more tied to bodily emotions, so the thought went. And men were more rational and therefore higher to God. And so because women were more prone to be slave to their emotions, they needed someone to rule them because they could not self-master. And this extends into lower classes of people like slave classes as well. So when you're talking about like essential maleness, you also have to talk about what it rejects, what it says it's not just what it thinks it is. You know, so when you're talking about honor and shame as being inherently a male conversation and being inherently male normative, then it's interesting because women don't even really get to be part of the conversation because we're not considered the center of all of these things.
If you're interested, listeners, about like Plato and Aristotle and the thoughts about men and women that kind of lead down through history, there's actually a blog post that was written a little while ago about, I think it's called, forgot what it was called, but we'll put it up in the show notes. But basically, tracing the idea of Aristotle all the way through a person called Thomas Aquinas in the medieval ages and how that got even twisted further into the witch hunts of the 1500s. And like it's a really interesting story about how one theological thought or philosophical thought can be pushed through Christianity all the way up into and have like really drastic consequences.
Yeah. So Paul was a student of Plato, and Paul wrote a lot of this into the New Testament. He softened it. Like, he didn't talk about women being deformed men. So like by his day, by his standards, like he was pretty progressive by for all intents and purposes. But he did write like the fact that man as the head of woman is preserved in Paul's writings means that Christianity's really been so shaped by Greek philosophy, it's ridiculous. So you always have to pay attention to that. Instead of saying, well, this is like, this comes out of the mouth of God and therefore is thus canonized for ever and all time. Mm-hmm. To look at the fact that Paul has borrowed this and is trying to relate to people inside his own culture and things that they would be familiar with hearing. And like, what do we do with that in the body of Christ, you know?
So I think the bottom line, I think that we would all agree is that it is dangerous to say that there's a universal construct for what gender is that is applicable throughout history and that it changes because of culture. It changes because of the things and the societies that it's a part of. And to make us a static, this is what a male is, this is what a female is, and it has been and it always will be, is dangerous and has led to dangerous things.
Yeah, so there's a word for that. It's called essentializing. Like there's an essential quality, kind of like what you're talking about, Alan, about having a form or an ideal. Mm. There's an essential quality that you can boil down. Like even saying that men are stronger than women, like there's nothing you can find. If you can find examples to disprove it, then it can't be a universal, right? Mm-hmm. So they're really, not only are there no universals, but we know for a fact, biologically, by modern science, that people are born with different sex parts, with different mm-hmm. biologies. And so this whole idea that there is maleness and that there is femaleness is, I would argue, and I think you guys would agree, maybe, that it is a completely constructed by culture. It's completely constructed by culture.
So would you say that there's different cultures, that there's no importance to cultural gender? Like, would you say there's no importance to those roles or to make the delineation at all? Or how would you...
Gender is an important part of reality. It's just culturally constructed. It's an important thing to understand your own gender and your identity and that kind of thing, and to respect other people's. But it is, what we're saying is, like, it doesn't essentially arise necessarily from the biology. It is a cultural construction, right?
I would go further. I mean, there's a really strong movement among like Google generation people, like, so younger, maybe like mid-20s and younger right now, called the queer movement, where really actually the idea of gender in general is being deconstructed. And that's causing a lot of interesting conversations to arise. For example, between queer advocates who say, like, gender doesn't flipping matter. We're all just on some spectrum. It doesn't matter if you present male or female or some mix of something else or something non. Like, just who the frick cares? Leave. Everybody just should live in peace, you know? Mm-hmm. And that goes along with sexuality, but that's a different discussion. So your gender identity, who you, like, present as, or how you see yourself, is really separate from who you're attracted to sexually and your sexual partners. So you can be anything attracted to anybody, right? Like, that's what queer theory has presented us with in the last 20 years. Of, like, you can be a transgender male to female who is still attracted to men, so technically not gay, but living as if gay. But it doesn't matter. Who cares about having all of these crazy labels? Because as long as people love each other and get along, it doesn't matter. You know, so we are culture obsessed with maleness and femaleness identity, but ultimately people get hurt when that happens. So why should we spend so much time on it?
And for Christians that I know, and I think this needs to be said for a lot of our listeners, this is a very touchy subject. And I think that, like, the Bible, the culture of Paul that you were talking about, when the New Testament was written, there is a very clear distinction between male and female. And there are very clear ideas about what men should be and what women should be. And I think that, like, yeah, Paul was like redeemed a lot of that and, like, talked about mutual submission and talked about, like, some things in a good way. But we are making the case, I think all three of us, that those things are culturally conditioned. Right. And they are not something that we must carry into our culture right now, into church culture right now. Right.
Yeah. Actually, I recently did a class on the book of Titus, and, you know, First and Second Timothy and Titus are like the pastoral letters from Paul. And they really, you know, they make clear, like, this is what a leader should be, a husband of one wife. It goes through these very specific roles that they're supposed to be. And the commentator made an argument that Paul is not giving a universal command on this is how leaders should be in the church, but is basically saying, if you boil it down, is that Paul is reflecting the norms of the society that that particular church lived in, and was essentially saying, listen, we have enough that we believe that is setting us apart in a dangerous way in this culture, like the fact that Jesus is Lord and we believe in one God and all these different things. So don't rock the boat and don't be weird and separate yourself in all these little things that don't matter in the moment. And that it was more of just a way for Paul to say, we have bigger fish to fry, try to fit in so that we can be the light that we feel we're called to be.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It was really interesting.
Can I make a really weird analogy real fast?
Sure.
Please.
is it between Hagar and Sarah?
Yeah. Before Darwinian evolution theory, before science that taught us about DNA and acceptation and all that other stuff, it was like presumed, you know, Genesis is telling us how the world was created. We hadn't discovered all the context for it and all that kind of stuff. Once biblical studies and science brought all this other information, this other avenue of information, we read the Bible in a different way, right? And so I think with psychology and theory about gender and those kinds of things, that has come much later than when the Bible was written. The Bible was written before the advent of psychology. And so now that we have this other source of information, like, we use that, like, what we know about men and women and about gender and the fact that gender is not the binary that it was supposed when the Bible was written. Like, we don't have to hold on to that. Like, the things that are written in the Bible are important and they're formative, and we need to listen to them and read them and understand their cultural context. But now that we understand, like, for instance, maybe Paul thought the earth was the center of the universe. We don't have to hold on to that anymore, right? because that's, we have avenues of information that are outside that we've taken in. And I think gender is kind of the same way. It was presupposed that men and women were these, you know, very different, very sealed off, like a man is a man, a woman is a woman. And now that we've come to explore and understand gender more, like, we don't necessarily have to hold on to that. We can hold on to the peacemaking. We can hold on to, like, the things that Paul was doing. We can hold on to, like, a lot of the concepts that that Jeff was just talking about that go to make peace between people and between sexes. But, like, to hold on to the ancient view of human sexuality, to me, misses the point, right?
Yeah. And here's an interesting dimension of all of this. And this kind of goes back into, like, queer, feminist, trans identities in the last 50 years, that a lot of, like, second wave feminists and trans activists are kind of offended by the queer movement. And Do you guys know anything about this? This is really interesting to me. Because these earlier groups of people had to fight so hard to get recognition and to dismantle patriarchy and sexism, that now when a new generation comes along and is like, none of it matters, they think it's a cop-out for actually doing the real deconstructive work of confronting, like, systematic sexism within institutions. And then trans and feminists have gotten in trouble or haven't gotten in conversation because early feminists, like, I'm thinking of Mary Daly, who I love, but she said, you know, how dare medical doctors think that they can construct a woman surgically, you know? And so there's been some guffaws, like, between the feminists and trans women, because they didn't want to work in allegiance. Like, trans women wanted to help the feminists and advocate for them. And then the feminists are like, but you're a construction. So, but then queer people say, well, aren't we all constructions? Yeah. You know, the way we walk around in the world, the way we engage with the world and interact with the world. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I don't walk around the world most of my day, most of my waking hours thinking, I am a woman. How should a woman interact with this piece of bread that I'm about to eat? Like, I think of walking around the world as a human, as a person with person thoughts that aren't necessarily intrinsically tied to my identity or my gender, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I think that deconstructive work is super important. And we already do this in the church, right? Like, women don't cover their heads in most congregations anymore. Women wear gold jewelry. Women braid their hair. You know, we already pick and choose culturally what we choose to ignore as not for, quote unquote, today, right? So that's changing subjects back and forth a little bit, but it's interesting to know the history of, like, how these conversations emerge and how they critique each other and kind of feed off of each other. But how all of these things, I think, are important to talk about, especially within Christianity, because, sorry if I can keep my rant up for another minute or so, but the hard thing is like, when you just say gender doesn't matter at all, which I'm prone to do because I just want everybody to get along and be happy, right? Is when you go into a religious context where all of the language about God is in the masculine form, and if you try to challenge that, you get in big trouble. Like, oh my God, you're pagan. You're talking about goddess or the female attributes of God. Get out of here, you know? It's like, it's really hard as a woman to feel normative and to feel like I'm made in the image of God. Truly, if God is so male all the time and I'm never allowed to forget it and I'm never allowed to explore alternatives.
I really like this topic that you just touched on, our language for God and our gendered language for God, is something that we need to talk about, like, a lot. There needs to be another episode.
Well, let's do an episode.
Where we delve into the gendered language for God. But, like, for right now, like, how can Christians think about gender and still feel like they're holding on to the Bible a little bit, even though they're, like, letting go of that stuff? Like, what would you guys say there are some things that just like the average Christian could do, realizing that there's gendered, you know, constructions inside of the Bible that are very binary? Like, how can we relate to other genders, and how can we think about gender in the church today that helps Christians take into account everything that's happening in the world? What would you say?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think there's an aspect of letting go of gender in general. It's because really, what brings people together, not necessarily, like, you don't really have, like, here's a blonde hair club, you know what I mean? Which is something that is, like, attached to just something you're born with. But there is, like, here's an outdoor club. So we have these events and we have these activities and we have these things that people are interested in, that we've almost assigned those things gender, as opposed to, you know, and so I don't know how you do that. Maybe not throw gender out altogether, but maybe, I don't know. But really, I think maybe just shifting our focus about what is it that's really bringing these people together? Is it the fact that they're male or female, or is it really the fact that they just have things in common?
So I, at our church, we actually had a men's breakfast for the past couple of years that about a year ago got changed to like an all church breakfast to have men and women included because they wanted to be, you know, sensitive to that and be more inclusive. And like, I still think that there are people in the world who like really do filter the world through their gender or whatever. And like,
but maybe, I wonder if maybe, it's maybe not their gender, but what they think their gender is supposed to be. Like, yes, is it interest based?
Sure. And I think what we need to do is respect other people, right? We really need to respect like how other people like view their gender. And that might be, I don't know. I think what Mona was saying was really interesting, how she doesn't walk around in the world thinking I'm a woman. You know, I'm eating this piece of bread as a woman. Although my wife tells me sometimes as a woman, like when you eat food, like even that is like a weird thing in our culture, right? Like sometimes you have to be like cognizant of certain things. And anyway, I think that's a really important point, is that like people are people, not just like a man or a woman. Like really seeing people for who they are is very revolutionary, I think, for our society. And
yeah, accepting them instead of prescribing that they change somehow, yes, I think is huge. And for me, it's really language based. I'm so aware that I walk around in a male gendered normative world. And what I mean by that is I'm very aware of the times when things and experiences and traits are gendered that just don't need to be, you know, like they just don't need to be. Why do we need to preserve the words? I might offend you guys because you're both married, but husband and wife is unnecessarily gendered. Why don't you just say spouse or partner? That's, to me, it's like, why do we preserve these things in our culture?
That's not offensive.
when do we, okay. So yeah. So being aware of when we do this and then asking, why do we do this? Why do we still do this? Is there a good reason for it? Well, I don't know.
It's like kind of like growing up, like everyone had their, I don't know, our denomination, it was Royal Rangers and Missionettes. And, you know, so the Royal Rangers would always do outdoor things. And then the Missionettes would always do,
Quote unquote, lady things. Your sister talks about that all the time.
That's funny because I'm sure that my sister would be so like, frustrated. Oh, the Royal Rangers got goodness. To go camping and do all this stuff. But I was the opposite. I was like, Why do I have to go outside and sleep when I can go into a house and a warm oven and eat food? Like that is more appealing to me. Like I don't want to be out there. So yeah, it's just so funny.
You don't want to kill squirrels and roast them over a fire you made?
No, I want to go to the store and I want to put on an apron and, and mittens and cook. Like,
etiquette classes and then walk down the aisle in a dress with a princess tiara on when you're done with your thing. Like that's literally what those girls had to do. Like that's their view of the world.
Yeah. No, I think all of that is just crazy. But think about the intrinsic socialization that happens when you teach girls from a fundamental age that it is their duty to be behaved, and then boys are encouraged to misbehave, and that is their birthright. Like that, all of the bells and whistles and the way this gets played out is one thing, but like that intrinsic teaching that a woman's job is to go with the flow and obey, and a man's job is to lead and to set the pace and set the tone, and then to think about the pain of people who don't fit into that mold and resist that mold even from an early age, and how harassed they are. Especially, I think of many of my gay male friends who have suffered like horrible, like unspeakable human atrocities for just being different, you know, and how sad that is, that we enforce this system of binaries and then literally like mutilate or kill people who don't subscribe to it. Like, for example, trans women are a really good example. Like men who have transitioned to women, there are multiple, like dozens of deaths every year of people just going hog wild and killing trans people. And this is not talked about in most churches. No. Like what are we doing? What are our systems? How are our systems programming us to think in ways that make us so violent when people step outside these molds that we've created? It's super bizarre to me. And not everyone's responsible for that violence. You know, like not all of us are going out killing these people, but we're all supporting the system that encourages hatred and rejection of certain individuals, you know?
It all comes back to, for me, in this conversation, it came down to the time I let go of the gender binary. This discussion for me became fruitful until I was able to see that, like, it's not that God created, you know, male and female, therefore they have to be male and female. It's like, once I let go of that, I was able to respect other people's processes and where they were at. And until we get to that place, like we hold on to that binary, it's going to cause those problems even on like an unconscious level. You know, it's kind of funny. I always hear the argument. Have you guys ever heard this? Like, it's just the biology. Just look at the biology. Like, you know, a man has man parts, a woman has woman parts. They need to act like men and women. And what I always say to people like that is just look at humans. Just look at the biology. They do not have wings. Right. They don't have feathers. They don't have wings that allow them to fly. So like airplanes are heretical. Like they're wrong. They are in line with, I don't know, the way God created the world. That's a way for me to point out it is a logical fallacy to go from the way things are to the way that they should be. That is assuming like so much. And that is.
Well, it goes into medical stuff, you know. Well, naturally, you just have a cold, so you just. Let your sickness take you and don't, you know, like that's sure. just, it's just how it happens. It's
but like just seeing the way the world is doesn't mean it has to be that way. You know what I mean? But we treat people like that in a lot of Christian churches on a daily basis. In every message that is preached, in the events that we hold and everything, we're told like, you will express your malehood this way and you will express your womanhood this way. And even if we don't say it overtly, we're like implying it and creating a culture that doesn't welcome people that are not those ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why are the stakes so high? This is my question.
Okay.
I
want to know what you guys think.
This is kind of ridiculous, but I heard like, and I even gave this argument before that there was this, anthropologist who studied all these cultures. And when the family broke down, you know, culture after culture, this civilization, you know, this dynasty in China, like the Roman Empire, when the family culture broke down, the whole society fell. And like, you hear this all the time. And so it's like, if we don't have this like strong definition of what a man is and strong definition of a woman is, we won't have a healthy family culture. And if we don't have a healthy family culture, the world will end. And it's like, that's literally what's at stake for some people in their minds, is that all of society is going to fall if we don't have these clear distinctions between male and female, which sounds ridiculous, right? When you say it like that. But
well, I think that
social ordering is important, like to a lot of people, like social order, social stability. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. You don't want to live in a chaotic world. So you guys, I want to offer one thing though, this to me is the most important point of this entire conversation. We've been talking about two threads. We've been talking about encountering patriarchy and sexism, and been talking about getting past binaries. And there's a lot of conversations around how all these things play together, but I'm going to offer that this is two sides of the same coin. Until you go through the process of interrogating sexism and patriarchy, you can never get to a place where you're really interrogating binaries in general. And I say that because it's the same thing with racism. If you try to say, hey, let's stop being racist and let's all be colorblind and race doesn't matter, what you default to is like the norm of whiteness. You never decenter what is normal, which is being white. And so colorblindness actually is still an erasure of race. It's still violence against race to the same degree that if you don't interrogate patriarchy, if you don't look at the arguments feminists are making and take them seriously, you're never going to get to a place where gender binaries can be gotten past and all the harmful things that they might do.
Yeah. And I think that that's a good place to stop this week. Obviously, like every other subject that we have, there's so many layers to this, but we are hoping that we've incorporated some ideas that are perhaps making you think on a different level. And please let us know. We want to start a conversation. So hopefully this has done that. And on the other side of the music, we are going to play a little game of Would You Rather? All right. So this week, we're going to play a pretty simple game, Would You Rather? We will ask each other two different would you rather questions, either this or that, and then the rest of us will answer, and hopefully we'll have some fun answers and entertain our listeners as usual.
I feel like this is a classic youth group game.
This is.
It totally is.
We did this every week during our like meet and greet. My wife would go up and give a would you rather, and that's how kind of people interacted. So
nice.
I feel at home on this segment. Okay, I'll go ahead and start. You ready?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to start with a juvenile one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Would you rather, for the rest of your life, use sandpaper as toilet paper, or use hot sauce infused baby wipes?
Baby wipes. I think I would develop a tolerance for the hot sauce.
Ellen, you going with the same one?
Yeah, baby wipes, probably.
Yeah, sandpaper.
I don't. I rubbed my hand on the wrong side of sandpaper once, and I'm scarred. So, I don't know.
All right.
I guess that wasn't that hard. Sorry, Jeff.
No, I guess not. I would have gone to sandpaper
one also.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, because there's always a smooth side to the other side of sandpaper.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Good point.
I think the idea is the rough side.
Okay. I have also another juvenile one to follow that up.
Okay.
Would you rather, for the rest of your life, burp confetti or fart polka music?
That's easy. Burp polka confetti.
Music.
That's,
what?
That's super fun.
You're joking, right?
That's like the coolest trick ever. You'd be a hit at every party you go to. You'd be like, hey, watch this. Soda, huh?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to drink soda.
Just because you drink soda doesn't mean you're gonna burp.
I guess the question for me would be, is it the same song every time you need to pass gas, or is it different? Is it like a playlist of polka music?
Yeah, let's go with the playlist.
Okay, because I'd be interested, you know? I'd be interested to see what comes out next.
No way. Burping the confetti. I'd be a hit at like craft sessions. Like, you know, they do their little confetti and just come over.
How many craft sessions do you go
People
to,
could
Jeff?
Hire you for burping.
I think that's the question.
I don't go to any, but I can make some serious money going to them by burping confetti. It's true.
Would you rather have $1 million now or an extra year of life?
Oh my God, this is like a weird math problem.
Would you rather have $1 million right now and have a year taken off your life?
Wait, taken off your life, or you get an extra one?
So you have your life, right? You just get a year taken off your life.
$1 million right now.
Okay.
Absolutely right now.
What if it was a random year of your life?
You can't have a random year taken
off.
Not
just the end. Like a random year of your life.
You can't die for a year and then come back for the rest of your life. Like, it's a year. It's going to be at the end, right?
You would seriously take $1 million right now and have a year taken off your life.
Yes.
Yeah, I would do it.
Okay, what about 5 years?
You can't change it.
Because you know what?
That's a different would you rather.
What about 10 years?
Okay, but here's the
Not
thing.
Not 10 years. I'm not going to take off a decade.
Let me tell you.
But take off one, that's...
Because if I was wealthy, I could afford really good health care and be live a super long time. So if we're talking like losing 10 years when I'm 90.
No, I mean a year off of your life without that money. Like right now you have your lifespan. Let's just say it's set in concrete. Obviously that has theological problems. But your life is set in concrete and you take a year off of that. Like regardless of whether you have money or not, it's going to be the same length.
No,
I don't
take a year.
Right.
That last year can't be fun anyway. I mean, really. It's just a year of watching everything fall apart.
Yeah, I agree. And all your friends die.
And all of your descendants like falling in love, Jeff, right? That's
a year.
You don't want to see
that.
A year
is nothing. Stop trying to do this. All right. I'm going to go super nerdy. I think this is an age-old question that we should all ask ourselves from time to time. Would you rather be Batman or Superman?
Oh no.
Superman. That's easy.
Batman has gadgets.
Superman can look through like the wrapping on a present and see what it is.
But Batman has like a more interesting human backstory, like tragedy.
What is more interesting? I go with Batman. Are you joking? What is more interesting than coming from another planet?
Or being super rich and having all these cool gadgets. Yeah, that would be lonely being the only alien on Earth.
Either way, you're an orphan. That's messed up. Either way, you're going to have your parents murdered.
Yeah, but Batman has Robin.
Yeah, you get over it. You have a bat cave, man.
Yeah.
But Superman picks girls up and like flies around with them. That's pretty amazing.
Batman also picks girls up and then bats around with them. That sounds bad. He like glides.
No, he just goes, I have a really nice action. Car. That's what he says.
All right.
I'm not wearing hockey bats. I wish I could do that. I wish I had a male voice so I could be Batman. Just for like a minute.
Why do you have to describe your voice as male and not gritty? Why does...
Because I can't go that low. I wish I had a lower voice.
But a low voice doesn't mean a male voice. You're being sexist.
I am.
We just had this big conversation and here you are just reconstructing all the gender that we just deconstructed.
Unnecessarily.
I'm offended. No, go ahead.
Okay. Would you rather... Okay. The assumption is that you have to use a time machine. For some reason. I haven't thought through this very well. Okay. Would you rather have a time machine that goes only backwards or only forwards in time?
Only forward.
Given the assumption that you'll never return to the present.
Only forward.
Only forward?
Only forward.
Alan.
That's horrifying either way. You're yeah, like, you know how everyone signs up for Mars One? They're like, oh, I would totally go live on Mars. Like, that horrifies me to no end. Like, you're literally leaving your entire present. Like, I would never use a time machine. Like, that scares me.
You have
so
to
do bad.
It.
But you have to pick
but
one.
I have to do it.
You have to, but you're not playing the game. Backwards or forwards? What's more interesting, the past or the future?
I might go back. I would probably be tempted to go to the future, but I think I would end up going back.
If I had a time machine that could go either way, I would still only go in the future. Why bother?
Because that's like who, but let's, you can only go in the future. What if you accidentally go a little too far and there's like nothing left? Like humanity's
that's true. Like
out.
What if we only have 10 more years?
Well, if the time machine is a DeLorean, that's fine. I'm not going to lie. I'll be in an enclosed space.
You have a map, right? Of the past. We have a map. We have, you know, some idea of what the past looked like. It's a little horrific at points, but like, you know what you're getting into. In some respect, but in the future, like, don't some people say we have a 50% chance of making it out of this next, like, century? Like, we're all going to...
Every century,
like,
I'm sure someone says that. I don't...
But you should watch the John Oliver Next Week Tonight episode on nuclear warheads, and you'll rethink that statement. All right?
Yeah.
You will.
Well, the past, though, you know, it's...
It's not glorious. That's just because we have a bad...
Maybe, Alan, you could go back and visit Paul and be like, hey, Paul, you know those like couple things you said? Maybe just rethink that. And no. You caused a lot of problems for us down
the line. I would never. That's
you wouldn't do it?
No, because
I would do it.
I am still, I love the Bible. I wouldn't edit it. Not for a day. Okay.
Who would you meet? Okay. You got another
one.
That's
a different game.
That's a different game.
So here's the last one, right?
Yeah.
Would you rather listen to an entire podcast episode of me breathing heavily for an hour, or have to record an entire episode of yourself breathing heavily for an hour?
Myself.
And then then upload it for everyone else to listen to.
Oh. I don't know.
Did you make this one up yourself, Alan? I think it
shows. What do you think, Jeff?
I don't know. That's weird either way.
Yeah. That's the point of this game, right?
Yeah, but that's that. For some reason, that one strikes me particularly awkward.
Yeah. Like,
either way, someone says, "Hey, what are you doing?" Oh, I'm listening to Alan breathe heavily. And then someone says, "Hey, what are you doing?" Oh, I'm just breathing heavily. Like
for the rest
would
of
you
your
have
life,
to tell people you listen to.
Yeah, for the rest of your life, we would know that you listen to me breathing heavily for an hour.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with me. At least I can explain that.
Wait. So you would let everyone in your life listen to you breathe heavily for an hour?
Yeah.
All right.
Because then it's weird for them, not me. Like, it's still weird, I guess, but I feel it's more weird if someone's.
If you listen to someone else, probably.
Yeah. Because it's just breathing, right? You're not saying like sex like noises or anything
heavy,
like that.
Heavy breathing. Breathing heavily.
Like I just got back from a run or something?
I don't know.
Which, by the way, I don't
this
do.
This is not super well thought out. Are you kidding? This is not like. I didn't like.
Well, that's the point of "Would You Rather" is not just picking, but asking clarifying questions.
Hey, I came with an original one, so I think I won.
That's true. Right. We should ask our listeners: would you rather listen to a podcast with Alan breathing, myself breathing, or Mona breathing?
No,
so
I don't want people to write about that.
That's inappropriate.
I'll just read the answers. I won't tell anyone what people
listeners,
say.
Listeners, you should record yourself breathing heavily.
And email it to
us.
Email
it, and then we'll
create an hour montage of all of our listeners breathing into a microphone. All right, we just got super weird. I think that'll do it for this week. Thank you so much for listening, despite what just happened. To support the podcast, please rate, review, or subscribe through iTunes or wherever else you get your audio content. And as always, we want to hear from you. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns for the podcast, email us at podcast@irenacast. Follow us on Twitter @IrenaCast. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/IrenaCast. And I think that's all we have.
That's all?
That is all.
That is it.
So for this week, I'm Jeff.
I'm Mona.
And I'm Alan.
Thanks for joining the conversation.
Cheers.